Now, I have, ladies and gentlemen, on this show called After Hours, there are a lot of people in this town I admire. I cannot, and I'm not just saying it because they're both here, I cannot think of two people I admire more than Tim Samuelson, who's been a friend for a long time. He is the cultural historian. That's an official title of the city of Chicago. Is that still your title?
Well, that's what it says on the card anyway.
Yeah. One of the great people. Nobody knows. If my father was still alive, it would be a very interesting conversation to see who knew more about Chicago than my father.
Oh, your dad would clean my clock.
No way.
Oh, sure he would.
And I think one of the most creative, interesting musicians I have ever met, and I have spent my life interviewing creative, interesting musicians, Reginald Robinson. Good to see you both.
Thank you.
Well, thanks.
We're going to talk. We're specifically here to talk about an event next Saturday called An Evening at the Pekin Theater, which I guarantee you people, few of you have ever heard of, because I had never heard of it. We're going to get into that, but I want to talk to these two guys about their life and career. Because we have the entire hour, we will. The show's free, ladies and gentlemen, so don't worry about having to go to a website or do anything crazy like that. You can go to the show next Saturday. Reginald's going to play. You're going to talk there, Tim?
No, I'm just going to sit back and watch the show. So
that's fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Perfect for me.
Beside going, Reggie, you might like some of this stuff too. I know that when you were young, you fell in love with history. And you would take yourself downtown from the north side and go to old buildings and try to take things from old buildings, like much like Richard Nickel, the famous photographer who was upset by the destruction of certain buildings in this town. What fired your interest in history?
You know, I think I just did it all my life. And there was something about history and old buildings that had an attraction to me. And it almost was like they were kind of alive. You could pick up a vibe from them. So I enjoyed reading about things, and I read about the buildings downtown. I was in grade school, and my parents thought I was down at the playground, and you know, I wasn't supposed to cross the busy streets. Well, I figured out how to get on the CTA all by myself.
How old were you?
Oh, I was probably about 8 years old. And so I would go downtown and look for these different buildings. And it was great to just show up. I never wanted to know exactly where they were because I knew what they looked like from pictures and books. But I loved the idea that they would just suddenly appear before me. And so I did this, you know. Actually, I'm still doing it today. So
yeah,
I guess I never grew up.
Well, there's another guy we both know who did something like that, an artist named Jack Simmerling, he was sort of working for his dad and going down to the old buildings at Prairie Avenue and finding things and falling in love with the history of things.
Oh, absolutely. Jack was amazing, and he was doing it before anybody. And he was going and he joined the wrecking crews and helped salvage the pieces of historic buildings, and he'd take them home. Then he would research the history of them. And he was a great artist, as you know.
Oh, no question.
And he would make these wonderful portraits and line drawings of them. And it was interesting where Jack and I would get together because there was a little difference in age between us, but we kind of did the same thing. And we would laugh that we were somehow brothers or relatives that somehow got separated early on. And even those in our family that are close, they'd kind of laugh when they'd see the two of us together and just kind of shake their heads. And you know,
he did have an amazing house. One of the most amazing houses I've ever been in. Reginald, you two are drawn to the past. You came upon music. You grew up in the Henry Horner homes, and your brother started playing music on a guitar, and you said, well, I kind of think that's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, that was the beginning of my interest in older music forms. My brother was listening to music, you know, like Tommy Dorsey, Benny Goodman, and people like that, Artie Shaw, and you know, all these big band leaders. And then from the late 1930s and early 40s.
What do you think? How did he get turned on to that?
I think just looking to be different. He wanted to be different in a lot of ways. He was interested in music. He started listening to.
You used to listen to Chuck Shaden's old radio show, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah. And he turned me on to that radio show, and I started listening to those, you know. Actually, we kind of grew up listening to old-time radio back.
But that's so interesting because it obviously was not what all your friends were listening to, was it?
No.
Jackson 5 or whoever. I don't even know.
At that time, it was like Michael Jackson and Prince. I listened to that music as well. And I also had an interest in the old buildings as well. That came along with the ragtime. I would see some buildings. When I got into listening to ragtime, I began to realize the time period. I used to originally thought it was like the 1920s, and then I come to find out it was much earlier. And then right around me, I started noticing some buildings had years on them, like 1900, 1899.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this was built during that period.
Well, one of the interesting things for you, which Tim can talk about too, is when you fell in love, Orbert Davis was one of the first people to sort of turn you on to. Came visited your school, and you heard the entertainer, Scott Joplin's the entertainer, and
yes.
Scott Joplin's relationship, Tim, with the 1893 Columbian Exposition is can't be denied. I mean, this is talk about both of you guys talk about how that visit influenced Joplin.
Well, certainly in terms of Scott Joplin coming to Chicago, and, you know, everyone came to Chicago for the fair.
Sure.
And so trying to piece this together, it's a little hard to follow the track, but it was a real convergence of music. In fact, it's very interesting. There was something on the Midway called the Dahomian Village, and it was people from Africa who were performing. And there are stories of people who heard the music at the Dahomian Village, which in many ways changed the way people thought about music syncopation and carried through as well. And there's even one early band leader who said that hearing the musicians at Dahomian Village really was the beginning for him of what later became ragtime, which then evolved into jazz, and the lineage just keeps going.
Reginald Robinson, as the leading... you are! Reggie's such a nice kid. He's like smiling, being self-effacing. What do you think it was? I know this is a really hard question to answer. It's like a psychological mystery question. What was it about ragtime when you first heard it? I think, you know, it might have been Scott Joplin's famous The Entertainer, that you said you were beyond intrigued. You were impassioned.
Well, I guess it was the difference from the big band music I was hearing. That was the beginning of it, listening to the big band music and beginning to understand what that music was all about, and just the music itself. And then when I heard the ragtime, which I had already heard as a child coming up in school, and coming up in my earlier life.
Yeah.
You know, then when I heard it at school, the entertainer played, I heard it at this solo piano, and I was like, wow, that doesn't need a band. You know, it was a contrast from hearing the band play and then hearing one musician play, and that one tune, I was like, wow, this is serious. It's serious, and it's, I can do that.
You taught yourself to play it, didn't you?
Yeah.
This is an amazing story. Tim Samuelson has taught himself to be a historian and a writer and all sorts of things, and the world's leading expert on Popeil. That's why these two are so fascinating. Again, they're going to be doing an event next Saturday, or this coming Saturday, and we'll tell you all about that, but I still want to explore their life and background and history, because they both love the history of this city and the history of, in Reginald's case, the history of music, too. And that is something I share with them. Saturday night, the Illinois Humanities Gang is presenting an evening at the Pekin Theater. It's featuring my guest here, Reginald Robinson, performing, and my other guest here, Tim Samuelson, partaking. You're just going to sit there and listen,
right? I'm going to sit there and listen.
How did this whole thing come to be?
Oh, gosh. I think it was probably both of our interest in the history of ragtime and the Pekin. Because I kind of go back as well, because when I was in grade school looking at buildings, I also collected old sheet music that I'd find in resale stores. And I had a grade school teacher who in her early years had played the piano for silent movies. So I would take the sheet music to the teacher, and she would stay after school and play them for me.
Oh, wow.
So I was listening. In fact, I even sang before the school assembly on talent night, the Pussycat Rag, which barely qualifies as ragtime. But anyway.
I've never heard you sing. Have you ever heard him sing?
You don't want to hear it.
Oh, we do want to hear it. Yeah, we do. Oh, no, we do want to hear it.
Especially that song.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
But anyway, so, but Reginald had this thing. So it kind of, this idea of knowing about the Pekin and knowing that it was totally off people's radar.
Oh, that is no kidding. And we were just talking here during the commercial about the fact that, you know, the Tribune has been a, you know, you think of newspapers as being the chronicle of the city in which they're printed, and they will print all the news. There is nary a mention of the Pekin Theater or, Reggie, you said, of ragtime in this paper until Howard Wright found you. That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that just, what do you guys think about that? I don't want to make it a total racial thing, because the Pekin, the interesting thing about the Pekin Theater is this guy Mott, his notion was to have mixed crowds too.
It was. It's interesting. Of course, what now in doing historical research, the Tribune is one that you can actually do keyword search.
Sure.
And it's online.
Yeah.
And so it winds up being a prominent voice in research. And you not only don't find much mentioning the Pekin, but you don't find much about what was happening in the African-American community of the South Side at all. But for such a major theater to be doing such innovative work and not mentioned at all, and I mean, there were extensive theatrical reviews that...
What is the first, when you think of it as the first Black-owned musical and vaudeville theater, not just in Chicago, but arguably in this country, its importance is tremendous.
Well, I'll say this. In that time period, from what I come to realize, it was not important. It wasn't important news.
Wow.
In the Tribune. And
anywhere.
You know, in black newspapers and in black society, it was important.
Yeah, I mean, it really that's was. Written up a lot. In, say, the Chicago Defender, and the African-American.
Yeah.
And also, there were publications that were of national scope for African-American audiences. And there are mentions of the Pekin. Probably one of the only kind of general notices is there was a theater magazine that actually did a two-page story about the Pekin. Took one of the few...
A Chicago-based theater magazine?
No. It was actually a New York-based magazine. And it even had one of the few photographs we have of performers on stage. And when you read the story, it's actually kind of embarrassing the way they cover it. In a very kind of... how would you describe that story, Reginald?
I'd rather not say.
Okay, well, let's just say it's troubling to read. But
yeah.
So when it was mentioned at all, anyway.
Yeah. It was at 27th and South State Street where this event will take place. What's there now, an empty lot?
Empty lots, parking lots. It is the most forgettable, anonymous place you could ever go. Anyone who has ever driven down that area of State Street has never given this a second thought because the building's been gone for a long time.
How inspired
can you get about a parking lot?
But I want to say this. From being interested in ragtime music and just old music and the artists who played it, most everything in Chicago that relates to black music, those monuments are gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Tony Jackson lived, it's gone. It's an empty lot.
Muddy
there's an empty
Waters,
lot. Yeah, there's
Muddy
an empty
Waters
lot.
House is still around, but it's yeah. like falling apart, and yeah. it's not. It's certainly not as esteemed as it should be. Yeah. Does that, as a African American artist living and working and composing and playing in Chicago, how does that make you feel? And it's like this huge part of your past, even though it's not directly part of your past, is just sort of erased.
Well, it's sad in one sense.
Yeah.
I think that most importantly is African-American people. It's good for African-American people to stay in touch with the history.
No question.
The history, and to know beyond buildings being destroyed or whatever, to stay in close touch with the history, don't you know, and pass it on, so it's not forgotten.
And I think, you guys are going to stay on all the way to 11. I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about, especially, I think, as blacks in this city have become increasingly, to my mind, disenfranchised. I mean, I think it's, you know, yes, there was redlining. Yes, there was the Great Black Belt, where people were forced to live. But there was also Bronzeville in its glory days. Tim, we've got 5 minutes in this segment, and we're going to go all over the place and talk about stuff. This place, the Pekin Theater, was in, you know, Bronzeville. What was in Bronzeville before there was Bronzeville was a prison camp, Camp Douglas, basically part of Bronzeville. But by the night, do you know that, Reggie?
I didn't know that.
Camp Douglas is a fascinating story to me.
Right in the same area, sure.
Yeah, right in the same area where Lake Meadows is now. But when the glory days of Bronzeville, this place, the Pekin Theater, was started, if memory serves, in 1904, 1905 or something, and then after Mr. Mott died in 1911, nobody really figured out how to keep it going. He was a gambling boss, and he was a great character, but none of his relatives could figure out how to keep it going. What was the height of Bronzeville? The glory days of Bronzeville were in the 20s, yes?
That would be when it became a real city within a city, where there was the need for an alternative community that would have both a business community by day, an entertainment community by night, because the existing mainstream business and entertainment communities totally excluded African Americans, or for the most part did. And so the Chicago's community set up its own city within a city, and it centered it on its both its commercial and its entertainment identity on South State Street. So by day in the late teens and the early 20s, you would have black-owned insurance companies and banks and tea rooms and all a variety of business enterprises that were kind of a counterpart to what you would have.
To downtown.
Yeah. And by night, it became this interesting entertainment Rialto where you would go on a Saturday night and get dressed up, and the music would come spilling out of the different saloons and entertainment and music halls, and you would kind of be attracted to go inside and hear.
Did white Chicago come down there on any level? I think of, you know, sort of New York, and let's all go to Harlem and do that scene, the almost slumming in Harlem. It didn't.
It was the same as Harlem.
Yeah, there was some of that, and there were clubs that were known as Black and Tans.
Right, right.
And, in fact, in its later incarnation, the Pekin was a Black and Tan. It was a dance hall, and that was a place where you'd go and say, let's go to the, you know, down to the South Side and hear this new thing they called jazz. And so it had evolved from a a entertainment venue and cultural venue into a dance hall. In fact, it was considered a dance hall of pretty, really challenging repute, let's say.
Yeah, sure.
And eventually was shut down altogether. Very different from what it would have been when Robert Motz owned it.
This is a great opportunity for you people, not just to hear one of Chicago's great performers, but also to learn something about this city Saturday night when you go down to Bronzeville at 27th and State to partake of this, an evening at the Pekin Theater. Go ahead, Reddy.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I won't be playing alone. I'll be playing with some luminaries,
musicians. Oh, yeah. But I always think you alone is good enough for me to go to 27th State. We'll talk about everybody else who's playing, and you will hear Reginald Robinson, because one of the things I want to talk to him about, I think one of the last times I saw him, I went to his house on his crib on the near west side, and to interview him, because he was he was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant. And I want to talk about how, because I didn't talk about how it was changing your life. It was just like, hey, aren't you glad to have this? And you go, oh yeah, Rick, I'm really glad to have this. So we'll talk about, because I think you did wonderful things with the money and the freedom that the money brought. So stay tuned for that. And right after we come back, you will hear Reginald Robinson play. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Reginald Robinson, who is a MacArthur Genius Award winner, Tim Samuelson and I, who are not MacArthur Genius Award winners. Reginald is almost without, I would say without argument, the greatest ragtime composer, performer on the planet. I want to talk about how your life changed when you got the MacArthur, but I first want people to listen to you. What are they going to listen to?
You're going to be listening to a tune called Pekin Rag, which I recorded back in the 90s. I was that interested in Joe Jordan way back from
that. That's when you got into that long ago you recorded this.
Actually, I actually got interested in Joe Jordan right around the time I found out about Scott Joplin, discovered
Scott
Joplin.
Wow, same time. That's really interesting. Because they had at the Pekin Theater, they had their own band. They did opera music as well as ragtime. So here, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, is Reginald Robinson. That's great, Reginald. That's really, really beautiful. When you, and I don't want to belabor this, I want to talk more about the event and more about Bronzeville, and more about ragtime and more about why we forget certain things that were huge parts of the city's cultural fabric. But when you got the MacArthur Grant, which comes with a, comes with enough money to allow freedom, you started doing more research, you started traveling, you started interviewing, you started, it enabled you to further explore your passion, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It allowed me to travel the country and reach people who are no longer here in time enough to interview them and get valuable information.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll bet that was an incredibly enriching experience. And now, it's not just me, but every time you're introduced somewhere, it's like, yes, MacArthur winning pianist. Nonsense. You're a grand talent on your own. But that's a cool thing to have gotten, a very cool thing.
Yes.
So we're talking about Bronzeville. We're talking about this event Saturday night at 7 o'clock at 27th and State Street, an evening at the Pekin Theater, which has had a huge influence on the life and music of Reginald Robinson and Tim Samuelson, the cultural historian of the city of Chicago, which I think is a great, great, great title and well-deserved because he gets history in a way that makes it we're going to praise him. He gets history in a way that makes it come alive, don't you think, Reginald?
I do. Yeah.
His passion for it is such that it becomes alive and it becomes real and it does not become academic and dusty. You know, and another thing about Bronzeville that was always stunning to me is that it was not until 1932 that Bronzeville or any African-American neighborhood had a library.
That's true.
That is shameful. I think it's shameful. It took Julius Rosenwald, one of the great philanthropists of our time, to build a library down there.
Yeah, that's there were some that were small ones in schools.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of a major facility, no. And it was a great omission, and that it took that long. And you know, for people like Vivian Harsh to
the first African American librarian
and pull together a library and also an archive of historical material relating to the neighborhood and really strengthen an identity that was a long time in coming.
Well, you think, you know, Reginald, you have been able to, given some resources, to explore and research, and that enriches your own music.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, well, they had no library. That's the other sad thing now. There are a number of public schools in Chicago that have no libraries either, and that's another heartbreaking thing. And one thing that always has haunted me is that on Oakenwald, there's a park that was named for Vivian Harsh, and that is the park where Hydea Pendleton was shot. And that in 2013. That is one of the haunting ironies of my life, frankly. So who's performing with you? No, let's wait. We got a minute before a break. What's Bronzeville like now, Tim Samuelson? I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, I knew these great two African-American guys who had opened a coffee shop down there and were hoping that the neighborhood would come back, and I think the whole housing nonsense thing has delayed that. Are you hopeful for Bronzeville? You know, it's right between the Loop and Hyde Park, man.
Well, I certainly am, and certainly the economic downturn of, you know, 2007, 2008 really disrupted a great momentum.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
There was considerable reconstruction of really, you know, good quality housing on the sites of what was torn down in urban renewal and the establishment of really great independent businesses. And you don't see the construction quite the way it was, but there are a lot of great business enterprises, which are really emerging and thriving in the area.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Which I feel very encouraged by. So,
if you feel it, then I feel it. Seriously.
But it is surprising how that economic downturn was devastating in general, but it really disrupted a really positive momentum.
Yeah, I felt the same thing. We have to take a short little break, and then Reginald Robinson is going to tell us who else he is performing with Saturday night, 7 o'clock, 27th and State Street. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. It doesn't cost anything. Tim Samuelson will be there with his lovely wife, Barb. I will be there, and I never go out. So the chance to see me and whatever. So it's going to be a concert setting, sort of?
Yeah. It's going to be right across from the site of the Pekin.
Oh, wow.
So you will be looking at the Pekin, and it will be like a concert, and it will be a capsulized version of what you'd see at the Pekin Theater years ago.
Sounds fantastic. Dude, it's hard to do a lot of research about the Pekin Theater. You're getting a lot of it here. You'll get a little more after a short commercial break, and you will hear Reginald Robinson play again. You hear singing. Someone sings with you. We'll be right back. Only a few more minutes with cultural historian and great friend of mine, Tim Samuelson, and I forget that MacArthur thing, one of the great musicians on the planet, Reginald Robinson. He will win a million awards in his life. They will both be, Tim, not doing any performing, just observing and partaking and enjoying an evening at the Pekin Theater, which features Reginald, is going to be, as Tim just told you, sort of trying to resurrect what it would have been like to go to the Pekin Theater, which was at 27th and State. Reginald, what is the performance going to be like?
Well, I can speak about the music.
Yeah.
We'll be playing, me and other musicians, luminary musicians in the city, we'll be playing pieces from the era of the Pekin Theater. And many pieces from the, you know, that were written for shows at the Pekin Theater. Yes.
What kind of shows? There was dramatic shows. They had operas there. They had basically everything there, right?
Yes. They would perform. They would create and perform entire stage shows. Many of them were topical to what it was like living in Bronzeville at the time, which was accompanied by with music, dancing, comedians, the great Afro-British musician Samuel Coleridge Taylor actually performed at the Pekin at one time. Even as a community center, when there was the famous heavyweight championship in 1910 between Jim Jeffries and Jack Johnson, they actually had a telegraph hookup where the fight results were telegraphed to the Pekin Theater, where people could hear the progress of the fight. And they had Jack Johnson's mother there on stage.
Oh, my God.
And was there when the telegraph message came that Jack Johnson was the champion.
It's interesting, Tim and Reginald, that given that this place sort of vanished in 1911, there cannot be anybody at the event Saturday night who actually went to the Pekin Theater, but there've got to be perhaps some relatives of some of those people. Yes.
Why, as a matter of yes.
Yes.
And so relatives of the musical director, the great impresario, Joe Jordan, is going to be there, is coming to Chicago just for this performance.
Yes. Reggie, does that put any pressure on you? Do you feel any pressure?
No.
Joy.
That's a great thing. That's an honor. And, it's, you know, I consider them family. They're like family to me.
Reginald is basically, if you're doing the historical counterpart, Reginald is Joe Jordan. He is the musical director, and he is in charge of the orchestra. And so he is the inheritor of Mr. Jordan, and a very worthy one at that.
Thank you.
That must make you proud.
Yeah, it's a good feeling, you know. I know it's a lot of responsibility, though.
How often do you play around these days? How often do you perform?
I would say occasionally.
Yeah.
Lately, with this, dealing with this show, this is different. I've never done anything like this. So I've been pretty busy at home.
Yeah.
Working on music at home. But I play occasionally around the city and out of the city.
Yeah. Yeah. You play internationally, of course.
Yeah. I should mention recently, I did, I think one of the biggest things that's coming up this year is the first ever recording of my music in orchestra form. So that'll be coming out around, I'll say in August.
Where'd you record?
It was recorded in Michigan, but it was recorded with, you know, orchestra recorded in 15 of my piano.
All original tunes?
These are all of my original pieces, yeah. Wow. And some new pieces that were not never been heard before. So,
how do you feel you've grown? The MacArthur thing, again, I'm talking about, not talking about the money part of it, but the freedom part of it. Do you feel a sense of growth as a performer and a composer?
I feel a sense of more respect. Huh. I get more respect now. You know? I think people realize that, you know, not just anybody just gets a MacArthur, you know, that's a rare and very distinguished award. So I get more respect for what I do.
Yeah. Tim Samuelson, this is a very good kid, don't you think?
Why, I would say so. No, he's pretty amazing. Known him for a long time and never known
him. How
did
you two first meet?
How did we met, I think, through our mutual friend Chris Ware, who is also a great ragtime enthusiast.
Yes.
And so
I would say a pretty good artist.
Yeah. I think I know you maybe after, a little bit after. I don't know. I met you just after Chris.
Yeah, but you know, I would have to say the pool of ragtime aficionados is relatively small. So
It is.
Well, Reginald's got to be growing it a bit, because when you hear him play and when you hear ragtime, which people I don't think hear enough, I think there's something about it that is, in the same way it grabbed you, you know, okay, oh, yeah, I heard the Sting. Yeah, I saw the Sting. Big deal.
Oh, well, forget about the Sting.
I know.
But it's interesting, too, is with Reginald, is that it not only has done great scholarship in ragtime music, but he is also carrying it forward in writing
exactly.
new compositions and taking it in new directions.
Yeah.
One of the things that always really impresses me as a story with Reginald is, for the people who have studied ragtime, and he has really expanded the audience for this, there was a photograph that was taken after Scott Joplin's death, the great ragtime composer, of his piano. And people saw this picture, and it was published for years. Everybody knew it. And it took Reginald to really look close and realize that on the piano was some handwritten manuscript.
Wow.
And he was able to take magnifying glass and microscopes and recreate this score that actually is this little – how long does it go? How many seconds?
31.
31 seconds of a lost Scott Joplin composition.
Oh, wow.
It took Reginald to look at this photograph that every music scholar interested in ragtime had looked at and come up with a 31-second of a lost Joplin piece.
You know what I realize is that historians had seen the photograph, but many of them had not thought about looking at that sheet music that was on the piano.
That's what makes you a Rick Cogan genius. Reginald Robinson and Tim Samuelson, Saturday night, 7 o'clock at 27th and State Street. That's all you need to know. Be there. You two guys, I admire you beyond words. We're going to end with, as you walk out the door, what is Sweetie Dear?
Sweetie Dear was a piece that Joe Jordan wrote probably around 1905, 1906.
And who's singing on this piece?
This recording was done with the great singer, one of the founding members of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, Rhiannon Giddens.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, good night, Tim. Good night, Reginald. Here you go.
buttons, teeth that just glisten like pearls. Sweet as dear smiles and winning wiles set my poor heart awhirl. It is the lips red as rubies, lips just as sweet as can be. But like the song, sweet is the one and only sweet thing for me. Sweetie dear, don't you hear what my heart is trying to say? Sweetie dear, please draw near, whisper about that wedding day. See your mind all the time, without love the day.
What a show. I much enjoyed it. I hope you did too, listening. Aubrey Mumpower, thanks for your expertise engineering. Lise Graham, thanks for participating, bringing on a guest, doing 90% of the interviewing, and just running this show like a smooth, smooth operation. Come out next Saturday, 27th and State Street, 7 o'clock. I will see you there, or if you can't make it, I'll see you on the radio next Sunday. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.